Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, the guest this afternoon is Ted Gunderson. And Ted was with the FBI for how long were you with the FBI, Ted?
27 years and 3 months.
All right, fine. And you actually headed the FBI in Los Angeles when you retired, didn't you?
Right. I was actually, toward the end of my career, I was head of the FBI in Memphis, Dallas, and then Los Angeles.
All right, fine. That's a pretty responsible position, isn't it?
Beg your pardon?
That was pretty responsible. That was
It was the second largest steel division in America and probably one of the most active. Had over 700 personnel under my command at $22.5 million budget, all that sort of thing. So, you know, I have a saying, Doctor, that and $1.65 will get me a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, since Ted retired in the late 1970, he's gone around and continued doing investigations. But, of course, often he uncovers government corruption, which doesn't make him very popular with people within government. And even corruption in the FBI, would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable what's happened. You know, I was in from 1951 to 1979. I can honestly say I had no knowledge of any corruption during that period of time. And, of course, we had an impeccable reputation. I don't care what you say about J. Edgar Hoover. He was a great man. I served under him for 21 years. And but it seems like in recent years, this the FBI has really, really slipped badly. And, for example, just I won't go into a lot of detail unless, as we go along, maybe something will come up. But I'll give you an example. In Oklahoma City, I investigated Oklahoma City on two separate occasions, and a defense investigator told me off the record that there were at least 11 other people involved in Oklahoma City. Now, if the defense knows that, it seems to me like the FBI should know that.
I know. These were the people who were defending Timothy McVeigh?
These were the people that were on the defense team for Timothy McVeigh and Mr. Nichols.
All right, fine. And so, but see, this was never brought out at the trial to this day.
No.
The government insists that there were just these two loners with Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols had, had something to do with it. But they don't ever go into all of the other people who were involved. You know, there's so many other stories that dealing with Oklahoma City. Do you think it had to do with the Aryan Nation people? Did it have to do with the people of Elohim City? Did it have to do with an Iraqi cell? Did it have anything to do with the Philippines? Or was this all simply to confuse us?
Well, in order to answer that question, Doctor, we have to go back. Let's go back very briefly to various conspiracy allegations. Pearl Harbor, we knew about Pearl Harbor three days in advance. Waco, that was a fiasco on the part of the government, and there was a cover-up. Let me just tell you a little bit about Waco. There were four BATF agents who were shot and killed in Waco. I researched that, and those four agents were all shot in the head, which means a sniper shot. I hear music, I think, don't we?
Yeah, we got. So basically, are you suggesting that they were killed then by somebody had sniper stationed there because they wanted an incident?
Well, to be shot in the head, it's a sniper shot. All
right.
Four of them. That's no coincidence. And one of the bullets was through the lip and down into the body, which means that it came up from above. I mean, the shot came from above.
All right.
Now, the unusual thing about that is that those four men who were shot and killed in Waco, BATF agents, at one time were all bodyguards for President Bill Clinton.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with Ted Gunderson, who's had a fascinating life investigating crime since he left the FBI. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest is Ted Gunderson, who was with the FBI for 28 or 29 years, and when he retired, he was in charge of the Los Angeles office with over 700 people working for the FBI under his command. Well, since he's been, of course, retired, he's continued doing investigations. And when he worked with the FBI, he was proud of the FBI. He really thought it was a great organization. He had the greatest respect for J. Edgar Hoover. But since he left the FBI, as he says, it slipped badly. He was just talking about what happened at Waco. And there were four BATF agents who were killed there. According to Ted, every one of them was killed with a headshot, which is a sniper shot, and every one of them had worked at one capacity or another for the President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, who approved this this onslaught, this murderous onslaught that killed over 80 people, including 17 little children, who were blown to bits. And, of course, if you don't know what really happened there, we have, of course, a wonderful DVD which has interviews with the people who talked to the Special Forces men who actually went in to do much of the murdering there. But that was after they had started out by killing four BATF agents. Who killed them with headshots? Well, of course, Ted says those headshots really had to be sniper fire. But then who would have done something terrible like that?
Well, as I said, Doctor, all four of these men were bodyguards for Bill Clinton at one time, so that's a highly suspicious situation. You would think that if there was a random shooting of some of these BATF agents, it would have been other than the body shot, but other than to the head, and you would have probably, not all of them would have been bodyguards for the President of the United States.
That certainly is a very, very unusual set of circumstances, isn't it? Does that sort of make you wonder maybe we weren't being told the entire truth?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. And then they came in with a tank. This is violation of Posse Comitatus. And, you cannot use military personnel against civilians in this country, this great country of ours.
Well, you never used to be able to, but it seems that there are a lot of people in Washington who don't believe in the Constitution, who don't even believe in the laws.
Well, that's right. And now, as recent as October 28th, this last year, 2006, President signed into law a provision which, according to Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont...
Hold that right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Ted was talking about what happened at Waco. The fact that they used military equipment, tanks against, women and children there in the enclave at Waco. And then, of course, this was a violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. And then Ted was commenting that in October of last year, the President of the United States signed legislation. You pick up the story there, Ted.
Well, he signed legislation which, according to Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat Vermont, will actually encourage the President to declare martial law. It does so by revising the insurrection, a set of laws that limits the President's ability to deploy troops within the United States.
In other words, this is the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. And, of course, it allows them to use the American troops against American citizens for the first time since the Civil War. Why would they pass that legislation? Why would they pass legislation that would allow the President to take National Guard troops without the consent of the governor to use against American citizens? And why are they refurbishing those old Japanese concentration camps in the middle of the desert to the tune of $38 million and now building new concentration camps? Halliburton given $385 million to build new concentration camps. Why would they be doing something like that, Ted?
Well, I think that there are certain elements within our government who plan to, come after us with martial law. This old terrorist movement is... moving in that direction. That's what it's all about. We talked earlier about, Oklahoma City. And then, of course, after that, we had the car bombing of the World Trade Center in October 26, 1993. And according to the New York Times, October 28, 1993, the FBI had an informant among the terrorists. He was the one who was commissioned to put the bomb together. He went to his superiors, and he was told to go ahead and put a real bomb together. He said, well, no, aren't we going to use a dummy bomb? And his FBI superior or handler says, no, we're going to use a real bomb. So,
and anybody who doubts that, we have a copy of that order we provide. Well, you know, if you'd like it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the article about the bombing of the First World Trade Center. And, of course, the man who actually wrote the article, we've tried to contact him. He's afraid to talk about it, but the article is quite self-explanatory. And Mr. Salem, who is the informant, FBI informant, kept saying, you didn't have to have the bomb go off. I mean, you know, I wanted to use powder that wouldn't go off. Why, you know, you could have stopped it. You could have prevented it. And of course, but we not to let the American people know that they knew all about it ahead of time. And
absolutely.
They had the informant working right there who knew exactly what was going to happen, and they let it happen anyway.
Well, then we have the situation where one of my sources, Michael Reconosciuto, Michael was an intelligence agent with the CIA for some 2 decades, and he developed information in advance, as a matter of fact, on March the 20th, 2001, 6 months prior to 911, he was contacted by an FBI agent, a fellow named Keith Kutry, and at that time he gave FBI agent Keith Kutry advanced information about 911 attacks that were to be taking place, and Mr. Kutry came back 2 days after 911, talked to Mr. Reconosciuto, and accused him of being anti-government, anti-FBI, and so forth. But I have a terrorism report, the documents that Michael wrote to his attorney on February the 5th of 2001, certified mail February 6th, 2001, with the information in there to his attorney that there were going to be advanced attacks on the United States, and he had a source inside the terrorist movement that would furnish information and be an informant for the federal government. This source was not interviewed until after 911, and he was threatened with prosecution and deported.
And, of course, we'll be glad to provide anybody who wants it with information. In April of 2000, that's over a year, almost a year and a half before 911, one of the hijackers walked into the office there in Newark, New Jersey, and said, I'm a hijacker. I was trained in Pakistan. I'm part of a group of hijackers here who are going to hijack planes and crash them, you know, and we've been trained to do it. And, of course, people locally in the office there believed him. But, of course, when they reported it to Washington, D.C., they said, get this man out of the country. Get him out of the country. Take him to London. You go along with him to get him out of the country. Now, you would think that they'd want to find out who the other hijackers were, wouldn't you?
Well, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
If you doubt that, we'll be glad to send you the pages from the Joint Intelligence Committee report that where this story is told. But the American people have never been told that, and certainly was never included in the 911 Commission report or in Thomas Keene's book without precedent. We can't let the American people know that they knew every single detail. In fact, what's so incredible is that when recently somebody got hold of the terror list that they have at the airport and listed there among the potential terrorists, they have to be careful of letting on the planes are the names of 14 of the 19 hijackers. Go ahead.
No, what I'm telling you is that Mr. Reconosciuto had this advanced information, furnishes the FBI, has documentation, as I said, he furnished it to his attorney. As a matter of fact, I've got the copy of the letter he wrote to his attorney, and here's what he said. Things have now come to a head. I now have contact with an operative that is in the Arab group known as the base. They're presently engaged in preparation for a major attack in the United States. And he goes on. We have an insider to this group that handles false IDs and passports for this group's operation. I also have contact with one of the parties that supplies explosive materials to this group. I am deliberately keeping myself with specific details until the government issues an immunity agreement with my contacts. And he goes on and tells, and this, by the way, this he had this individual who the FBI interviewed and threatened with prosecution and deported was the individual who had access to and was preparing false passports for the terrorists.
And so they left those 3,000 Americans in the Twin Towers to die that morning.
That's right. That's right. 100%. Absolutely unbelievable. But you see, the point I'm making, Doctor, is we had Oklahoma City, we had the 93 bombings, we had 9-1-1. Now, what happens after 9-1-1? The World Trade Center bombing, of course, the airplane flights into the buildings. What happens after that? We have Homeland Security. We have the Patriot Act. These acts are taking away our constitutional rights. And that's what it's all about. And as you mentioned, we have concentration camps, too.
And, of course, what's so incredible, if there really was a terrorist threat to America, the first thing they would have done would have been to seal our borders and stop terrorists from coming in across the southern border. And they've absolutely refused to do that. And you have to ask yourself, why?
Well, it's getting worse. It's worse than that. Look what's happened to the guardsmen who shot the drug dealer. And now they've been tried and convicted and sentenced to 10 and 11 years respectively, and maybe we're protecting our borders. And and then we have a group of congressmen who went to the President of the United States and asked to give them, these two men, a pardon, and the President refuses. So what's going on there? What's the story on that? We have these people coming across the border in masses, and I have been told that many of these individuals who claim to be Mexicans are actually Arabs. So we have a problem there and with the border situation. And our government is not supporting it. He's talking about bringing the National Guard. National Guard were on the border here recently, and a group of well-armed, apparently Mexicans, came across the border. Our National Guardmen did not have any bullets in their guns, and they had to retreat. Had you heard about that, Doctor?
No, right, I have. And of course, the thing is that if there's really a terrorist threat, they would be checking all the cargo that goes onto the planes. They're not bothering to. All they do is check your carry-on to give you the idea that they're so concerned about the threat of terrorism. You got to take off your belt. You got to take off your shoes. You know, you got to take off your coat. You got to put everything in a little deal, and you got to go through and be patted down. If there was a terrorist threat, wouldn't you think that they would check the cargo that goes in there? After all, it would be very easy to have a bomb planted there and trigger it off with a little electronic device you were carrying it. But, you know, it would go. But it's all a matter of perception.
Well, these guardsmen were forced to retreat from the Mexicans, and this occurred in early January just this year. And a band of Mexican gunmen thought to be wearing either military uniforms or body armor entered the United States. It was near Sasebo, Arizona, to test the National Guardsmen, of course, and the guardsmen saw them, and they had to retreat because they didn't have any guns in their bullets.
Or any bullets in their guns.
I mean, bullets in their guns.
And really, none of this really makes sense unless everything is an illusion. It's all smoke and mirrors.
That's right. And so we have, now we have, like you said, we have the concentration camps, and America, you better wake up.
Well, you've been at this for a long time, though. You've been investigating a lot of things. You've been investigating these pedophile rings that go right into Washington, D.C., and right into the White House, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I absolutely have. You see, when I first retired, I was hired to investigate the Dr. Jeffrey R. McDonald case. He's a former Green Beret doctor who was convicted of murdering his wife, two children, in Fort Bragg in February 17, 1970.
And he was actually murdered by a satanic cult, and the government's been covering for that satanic
cult.
That's
right. I'll tell you a little more about that when you come back after the music.
All right. I think that is one of the most amazing stories. And we'll be back here in just a moment here with Ted Gunderson, and we'll talk about the, so many of the things that are going on today. The things that you're not going to read about in your newspaper, you're not going to hear talk about on most radio programs, and you're certainly never going to see discussed on nationwide television. Well, Ted, why don't you tell us the story of Jeffrey McDonald? I think that's one of the most tragic stories I've ever heard.
Oh, it's terrible. Actually, Dr. McDonald's wife and two children, 2.5 and 5.5, were murdered, viciously murdered, on February 17th, 1970, at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Dr. McDonald was in the house at the time. He fought off two white males and a black male and a white female with a sloppy white hat. He felt a sharp pain to his side. He lost consciousness. He regained his consciousness halfway in the hall and halfway into the room, the living room. And while he was fighting with these individuals, he heard his children say, "Daddy, Daddy, help me, help me." His 5.5-year-old was yelling, and he heard his wife yell, "Jeff, Jeff, why are they doing this to me? Why are they doing this to me?" So when he woke up, he went back. The house was silent. He went back and found the bodies, numerous stab wounds in them. And the MPs came, of course, and one of the MPs saw a woman in a floppy white hat who Dr. McDonald said, a woman in a floppy white hat was one of the ones that had accosted him. And they didn't check that out. Long story short, the house was not protected. The crime scene was not protected. And there were people in suits and nobody knew who they were and just walking through, picking up the evidence and so on and so forth, looking it over. And it was just a terrible, terrible situation. There was Colette, the wife, had skin under her fingernails. The skin was given to William F. Ivory, the chief investigator for the Army. And what do you know? The skin disappeared. Of course, from the skin, they could have determined the blood type of one of the assailants. Long story short, I was asked to investigate the case after Dr. McDonald had been tried and convicted and sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences. And I entered the case in January 1980. And within 10 months, on October 25, 1980, I obtained a signed confession from a girl in the floppy hat. Her name was Helena Stokely. And she told me the whole story. I spent had 3 sessions with her at a total of 30 days altogether. And I thought, well, now we're going to get this man off. We're going to have a new trial and what have you. And we submitted these documents. We had a hearing, and the judge refused to grant a new trial, even though we had a confession that had been given to the FBI by a girl named Kathy Perry. And in that confession, Kathy, who was in the house that night, I believe, based on everything that I've been able to develop, was high on drugs. And she said in her confession to the FBI that there were 2 little boys that were murdered. Well, actually, the 2 little girls. So being high on drugs, and she was in a mental institution, by the way, when the FBI did interview her. And the other individual, another individual who was among the group, Helena Stokely's satanic cult, and she said it was a satanic cult murder, he also confessed when he got drunk in his neighborhood to one of the neighbors. So we had this documentation. Now, the latest information on the McDonald case, doctor, is that the courts ordered or approved of DNA tests in 1997, and the tests, the judge said that only the prosecution could be present when they opened the evidence envelopes. There were 15 evidence envelopes, and not the defense. The defense was not allowed to be present.
Hold that, though. They're going to be back in just a moment with Ted Gunderson telling you the story of Jeffrey McDonald. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ted was actually asked to investigate the Jeffrey McDonald case. His wife, he was a Green Beret doctor, and his wife and 2 children were murdered by people from a satanic cult, and everybody was intent upon covering for the satanic murderers, and it was the case was just incredibly handled. He was railroaded into prison, then Ted was called in, and he actually tracked down several of the people who were there, got signed videotape confessions from them, and the judge refused to allow another trial. Recently, of course, there was a request to open the evidence box and check the DNA. What happened when they tried to do that?
Well, the DNA was tested. And the latest information I have on the case, hang on just a minute. excuse me. The latest information I have on the case is that the results are on the judge's desk or in the hands of the judge, and we have ample information that's been developed that should warrant a new trial for Dr. McDonald. The judge is sitting on it.
And, of course, the most incredible part of the thing is recently one of the marshals who was involved, a federal marshal, has come forward and said, I heard the confession. One of these people from the cult confessed to the prosecutor, who said, if you say that on trial, I'll have you tried for murder.
That's right. That was Elena, the girl that gave me the confession. And of course, I came along later and obtained it myself. And she was talking to Jim Blackburn, who was the U.S. attorney there in North Carolina and was one of the individuals who tried the case. The other attorney who tried the case was a fellow named Brian Murtaugh. And it's kind of interesting because for some reason or other, Doctor, they really wanted to get McDonald. They actually brought a specialist, a fellow named Warheide, out of the Department of Justice, Washington, D.C., and Murtaugh down to North Carolina. And Warheide was there for 6 months trying to convince the grand jury to indict him. It took that much of an effort, 6 months' effort, to try to get the grand jury to indict him. They finally indicted him, and he was, of course, tried, convicted, and lost in trial. But it's a huge cover-up.
And, of course, it involves the prosecution, it involves law enforcement, it involves the judge. Obviously, they're all covering for this satanic cult. You have to ask yourself, why would they do that?
Well, not only that, you see, in this particular instance, in this case itself, it involved bringing drugs in from Southeast Asia. And Helena told me that her satanic cult group was distributing these drugs up and down the East Coast. The drugs were being brought in plastic bags in the body cavities of the dead GIs, flown into military bases around the country. And this is documented in an article in Time magazine, January 1, 1973. So that's the reason for the cover-up, Doctor.
There was a CIA connection. That
CIA Army drug operation, absolutely.
And here's a man who's been imprisoned for 25 years.
That's right.
And, of course, I mean, there's so much evidence. In fact, you have that tape confession, don't you?
Oh, yes. I've got a videotape of her confession. What happened is, in one of my sessions with Helena, I convinced her to talk on camera to 60 Minutes. And they sent a gentleman down from New York to South Carolina, and they taped her on her confession, and I have that tape. And so we have her confession on tape. And it's available to the public, by the way. It's available to anybody listening to this show. By the way, folks, my website is tedgunderson.com.
And I bet, though, that CBS didn't show that nationally, did they?
No, they didn't. Not at all.
And, of course, see, this goes right into CBS. I mean, this thing is so extensive. It's so hard to people believe that anything could be this extensive. And you say, well, you're talking about a conspiracy. Absolutely, we're talking about a conspiracy. A satanic conspiracy against God and righteousness and everything that's worthwhile and holy in this world.
That's right. And, it's being covered up by the government. I have in my terrorism report that's available on my website, tedgunderson.com, it's titled, The Terrorist Activities, Advanced Knowledge Furnished to the FBI, 6 months prior to 9/11. I personally went to Washington, and I see I hear music, so I'll just wait.
Go right ahead. I'll tell you when we're going to take the break.
Oh, wait, you want me to keep going?
Right.
Oh, okay. I personally went to Washington, D.C. in January of 2003, handed out over 150 copies of this report. It is available on my site, folks, tedgunderson.com. And I also personally talked to Lee Hamilton, who was co-chairman of the President's Commission to Investigate 9/11.
Of course, he's a longtime member of the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, a very charming man.
Well, they didn't call me to testify. They didn't call Reconosciuto, my source, to testify. This was covered up, too.
Everything is cover up because 3,000 Americans died, and they knew it was going to happen. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ted Gunderson, who's read a fascinating life, having been with the FBI for 28 or 29 years, and then having retired and having been asked to investigate so many of the important cases of our time. I think the Jeffrey McDonald case was so vitally important.
Well, that was what propelled me into getting into these other issues. I went public with that case, radio and television, and I had people contact me from all over the United States, telling me the same basic story. People from the Northwest, South, the Southeast, Midwest, the East Coast, and I'm still being furnished this information. These people still contact me to this very day, Doctor. And I said, at the time, I said to myself, well, if this is going on, this person from the West Coast tells me the same information as the person on the East Coast, there must be something to it. And that's where I'm coming from. And so I started looking into it, and that's what I learned about it. And, of course, this led me into prostitution. This led me into the missing children. The missing children is really an issue that needs to be addressed by our government. I have a report called The Finders, and The Finders is a CIA covert child kidnapping ring. It's been operating since the early 1960s. My report, Doctor, that documents that The Finders is involved in kidnapping children and international trafficking of the children, I have furnished this to the FBI, and I have filed 6 complaints formally to the FBI. I have faxed them, I've talked to them in person, and I still have not received any information back. They have never bothered to come out and do a formal interview of me.
But don't you think they're really afraid to? Because the last thing they want is for the American people to learn the truth.
Well, I did a survey. You know, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, that's an adjunct of the U.S. Department of Justice. And these are the flyers that they send out across the country to, I guess they must send out millions of them. And in these flyers, they have pictures of the children, and they say this child was found, or this child, we're looking for this child, and so on and so forth. Now, I was able to gather together 94 of these flyers, and I charted, Doctor, the months of the year that these 94 were missing. And I learned that, in this instance, there were 18 in June missing, 15 in October, 14 in December. That's very significant, because that's half of the 94 cases. And so half of them were missing the 3 months compared to the other 9 months. It just so happens
Hold that thought right there, Ted. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ted Gunderson, who was many, many years with the FBI and ended up, of course, the time he retired, in charge of the office of the FBI in Los Angeles with 700 people under his command. But anyway, he was just talking about, of course, as he began to analyze the missing children. You hear a lot of talk about the missing children. Oh, we're so concerned about the missing children. But what have you discovered about the missing children as you begin to analyze where all these children are and why there seem to be such a strange pattern of their disappearance?
Well, Doctor, what we have here, the month of June is a big satanic holiday. It's the summer solstice. They have a human sacrifice in June. The month of October, of course, October 31st is Halloween. There's a human sacrifice among satanic circles. And December is the winter solstice. That's also a big satanic ceremony, and it involves a human sacrifice. This information, ladies and gentlemen, is available on my website. The reports are available if you want to order them. It's called The Finders. And I'd like to point out, as I said earlier, that this information came from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and it is estimated that there are 85 to 90% of the children who disappear are among the 91 who disappear every hour. There are 91 Americans who disappear every hour. 85 to 90% are children. Now, there's something, somebody has to do something about that. This is a national crisis, and I cannot get anybody's attention on it. So, as a matter of fact, in the 1980s, I was asked to go back to Lincoln, Nebraska, and Omaha, Nebraska, and investigate a case where they were trafficking these children. and involved the Johnny Gosch kidnapping case, by the way, Doctor. And so we learned and from working in the case and the investigation that children were being taken out of Boys Town orphanages, foster homes, and they were being driven from Omaha to Sioux City, Iowa, 184 miles away, being placed on private jets and flown to Washington, D.C. for sex orgies with congressmen and senators. And this is how they frame our congressmen. They tell them how to vote because they've got the goods on them. I personally have talked to the official, quote-unquote, photographer of the group who was taking the pictures of these individuals, and they use it for blackmail. Then they tell them how to vote. You remember this case recently, Mr. Foley, Congressman Foley?
Right.
That was an example, but that's just that's just the tip of the iceberg. But this Franklin cover-up case, John DeCamp was the gentleman who really, he was a state senator at the time. He's no longer a state senator. And John wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up. The Franklin Cover-Up, again, is available on my website, tedgunderson.com. John is a national hero. John represented one of the kids, filed a lawsuit, and had a $1 million judgment awarded to him. He was standing on a street corner in Lincoln, and a stranger walked up to him and said, if you collect that money, you won't live to spend it. In addition to this, John's children were playing in his yard one day, and two couples drove up in a car, ran over the dog back and forth, and told the children, if your dad doesn't back off, we're going to do this to you. Now, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with vicious, evil people, satanic cults.
Amen to that. Well, Chris, this is a standard pattern to threaten the children. They do this over and over again to upset the parents and hoping that they'll back away. And the fact that you have no protection if you're really trying to get the information out, who are you going to report it to?
Well, I've gone to the police. I've filed incident reports with the Las Vegas police, with the Los Angeles police. I live in both towns. And nobody really pays any, the FBI, nobody pays any attention to it. They don't pay any attention to it. I recently, Doctor, had to move from Las Vegas to a small town in Nebraska, under 300 people, in order to protect myself. I was being poisoned with cyanide and arsenic, and I have the documents from the laboratory report, documentation for the laboratory reports to prove it. That's how these people are. They're relentless. And going back to the children, I'd like to point out that in recent years I received two complaints about from airline employees that airplanes containing several hundred children were flown to Paris, France, and from Denver, Colorado, and Los Angeles, California. 210 children were reported on the manifest of this Denver plane. In addition, Paul Benassi, who was part of the Nebraska Franklin cover-up case, told me about children who were being auctioned off in the early 1980s outside Las Vegas, Nevada, Toronto, Canada, and barn in Lincoln, Nebraska. These children were auctioned off in their underwear with a number on a card around their necks, some for $50,000 each. And 191 children assigned to the Child Protective Services in Florida at one time were missing with no indication of their whereabouts. 100,000 children disappear every year, according to the Reader's Digest, July 1982. But, of course, the update on that is 91 Americans every hour, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Well, what is this about Boys Town? You know, we always think of Boys Town and Spencer Tracy, and what are the noble things that take care of these little orphan boys? What was that all about?
It just so happens that would be a very popular place to grab children, and that's what's taking place. There was a covert operation out of Boys Town, and they were bringing these kids out of there, certain kids, they were targeted, and taking them to the Sioux City and putting them on these planes flying into the East Coast. So, I can't say that everybody in Boys Town is involved in this, but Boys Town has a multi-million dollar budget every year. And it's, by the way, speaking of budgets, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, they have a budget of $49 million a year. They had $49 million actually donated to them a year before last. Those are the latest figures I have. And as of last fall, they had located 139 children in 25 years. Now, that's not enough kids, as far as I'm concerned, based on the amount of money that they have to expend and try to locate these kids. You give me $100,000, and I'll locate that many kids. So we got a real problem in this country. And it seems like we just cannot get the authorities to address the issue.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, when you first got started at this, Ted, didn't you really sort of try to figure out why this could be going on? And eventually you came to the realization of really there was a satanic element to this, didn't you?
Absolutely. These satanic cults have infiltrated every level of our society across the nation. McMartin preschool case, I found, as a matter of fact, there were kids, their parents were dropping the children off in the morning and then come back right after work, and they found out that one of the kids had blood in his diaper. We're talking about 2-, 3-, 4-year-old children, and the mother started making an issue out of it. The other children then came forward. This was in the 1980s, by the way. And I worked that case, and there's no question, and that was also satanic. The children talked about adults in robes. They talked about a tunnel under the school. They talked about adults in black robes with candles chanting. They talked about the killing of brown babies. I think they were Mexican children, by the way. And they talked about being flown into the mountains, and from, this is Manhattan Beach, California, from Manhattan Beach to the mountain's crest line, which is was probably about a 20-minute air jet ride. And one of the McMartin's family had a very close friend who owned some jets, a jet, I should say, a private jet. And we believe that that was the jet that was used to fly these kids to Crestline, because the kids talked about a human sacrifices and satanic ceremonies in Crestline. I located that spot. In the meantime, the authorities in Los Angeles were prosecuting the McMartin family, Ray Buckey and the son, and I called Lil Rubin, the district attorney who was handling the prosecution, told her that I had the spot located where the kids were flown into the mountains, and she would not have anything to do with it. She said she's not interested. And I had this. I had the pictures of it, by the way. I also have pictures of the Finders warehouse in Washington, D.C., where they kept these kids. It's kind of interesting because in the Finders case, you can see where they had windows in this building, but they've been bricked. They filled them in with bricks, and the doors are steel. So if any children get in there, they're not going to get out.
Well, no, actually, didn't you find the tunnels underneath the McMartin school?
Yes, yes, Doctor. I heard that some of the adults, first of all, the school had been sold to Danny Davis, the attorney, by the family, had been given to him, actually, because he was the attorney who represented him, and he had sold it to a contractor, and I went to the contractor and asked if I couldn't be on the property for a couple of weeks, because some of the parents were over there digging, and I went over to the parents and said, you can't do that. So you're involved in this case. You have to have neutral people come in and handle this, preservation and collection of evidence, et cetera, et cetera. So I went to the contractor agreed to let me work on the property. Some of the parents and I hired a professional archaeologist, Dr. Gary Stickle, and we came in, and at the end of 34 days, Dr. Stickle declared that there had been tunnels under the school, that the tunnels were filled in, and the children were telling the truth. The children talked about a trap door in the triplex next door. They were taken through the tunnels, up into the triplex, and then taken out. It was in a bathroom, taken out of the bathroom into cars and transported out for prostitution in the community, 2-, 3-, 4-year-old children. And so the kids talked about that, and they were telling the truth, Doctor.
And, of course, the Wall Street Journal has done everything they could to say this was the greatest of the miscarriages of justice. And you wonder why the Wall Street Journal would spend so much time pointing out that this was all just fabricated.
Well, they said that it wasn't true, is what you're saying.
Right. In other words, they were saying McMartin had been falsely prosecuted, and I don't for 1 minute question anything you're saying, Ted. I'm just saying, isn't it interesting that this so-called conservative publication with millions of readers convinced so many of them that the story was a lie?
Well, Doctor, there was no press. When we found the tunnels and the Dr. Stickle announced to the press that we found the tunnels, that had been filled in, There was no national publicity. There was no, the newspapers didn't even, the L.A. Times did an article on it. And in the first part of the article, they said that we didn't find tunnels. And the last part of the article, they said, they finally said we did find the tunnels. So it was contradiction there. I wrote to the publisher and reported that the reporter to the publisher, pointed out that he had discrepancies in his own story. So there was nobody that gave us any publicity on it. But they should have, researched it better. I happen to have a 200-plus page report, scientific report, that documents there were tunnels under the school. Again, that's available on my website, tedgunderson.com.
That's tedgunderson.com. Let me suggest you go there, pull down the information, and you begin to understand that, here's a man who's dedicated his life to trying to get the truth out about all of these issues, and, of course, repeatedly blocked by the people who control the media, who seem to have a different worldview, because they have a different agenda, because they worship a different God.
Isn't that the truth?
Well, Ted, you've been in on a lot of other exciting investigations, haven't you?
Well, it seems like every time I close down on one, I get another one. And I had one very recently that was kind of interesting. This gentleman from Wisconsin had attended a school for writing books in Sonoma County, California. That's right down the road from you, isn't it, Doctor?
That was up the road a little way.
Up the road?
Right.
And while he was there, he's a logger by profession, and he went into the woods to check out the lumber and so forth. And while he's in the woods, he noticed a caravan of four, five, six cars and about 15 or 20 people coming in, all in black. They're dressed in black. And he also noticed that there was a young female there who was nude, and they spotted him, and they started shooting at him. And my client then got his .45 automatic out, and he had a gun battle with these people. And he killed four of them, and then he went in and ended up reporting to the police. He chased the leader into the woods, and while he was chasing the leader into the woods, they picked up the debris, and the girl jumped in the car and got away and escaped. I have a copy of her letter that she wrote to the police. And this gentleman, of course, he wrote it up, and he wrote a letter to the police and reported it. Now what they're doing in Sonoma County, they're prosecuting him for furnishing false information to the police and wanting him to pay over $20,000 in risk.
Well, at least they're not going to try to convict him for shooting the four people?
Yeah. Well, no, because they claim it didn't.
They claim it didn't happen?
They claim it didn't happen, even though he was shot five times by two different caliber weapons.
I see.
And that's just a typical cover-up that you're going to have in these cases. They don't want to admit, the police don't want to admit, and plus the infiltration of the cults into the law enforcement. They do not want to admit this.
But don't you think that most of our law enforcement people are good people? There's just the leaders of this whole thing are in key positions.
That's right. And there, I want to emphasize that, Doctor. There's good, a lot of good people in the CIA and the FBI and law enforcement, by and large, 98% of them. But there's a few people at the higher levels that create these problems. So this case is pending now. I personally believe that it happened. Why would he make up a story like that?
And how would he shoot himself twice with different caliber bullets?
Well, five shots. He had five shots, as I recall, with two different weapons. And he was lucky to be alive. But that wasn't the end of the story. About a year and a half, this was in October 31st of 2004. 18 months later, he went back to Wisconsin, by the way. And he is confronted again by two people with guns, and he had a shootout with them. And they got away. He was shot up again. He had wounds himself again. And they got away, and he learned through his various sources that these two fellows ended up dying. But he thinks that they were coming from California to make amends to him, to try to kill him for killing their buddies back in California. So that's, you know, these people hear about me and they give me these cases and I try to work them as best I can.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, where does this he stand right now? Is he still being required to put out $20,000 for giving false information, or is he going to take that to court?
Well, right now the case is pending.
All right. Well, these are incredible stories. Now, the average individual, they say, this couldn't be true. But I think when you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle, and there really is organized evil out there, there really are satanic societies, there really are people who sold their souls to the devil. And if you haven't, of course, seen our videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, or read Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil, or heard my interviews with Malachi Martin, or read our new book we're carrying, entitled Satanic Crimes. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, Ted, we've just got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Doctor, I just keep going forward. Don't think I haven't had some of my own security problems. I have. As I said, I recently moved from Las Vegas to a small town so I could protect myself. I've had heavy-duty surveillances on me. I've had telephone taps on me. I've had burglaries into my house since I came here to this small town in Nebraska. I was gone for about a week and nobody in the house, and when I came back, the drawers of my cabinets, it's a wooden cabinet, custom-made, and the drawers are custom-made to fit the openings, and 3 of the drawers would not fit because somebody came in and pulled them out. I also learned, I have a revolver, of course, and I also learned that somebody, and I keep this revolver hidden in my bedroom, and I found out that somebody emptied the bullets out of the revolver. I would never have a gun that wasn't loaded, because when you need it, you need it. You're not going to pull the trigger and have air come out of there. It's going to hurt anybody. So I've had some problems since I moved here. I had surveillances on me here, at least 4 that I'm aware of. And we're talking about the cults. This is the satanic cult. They're operating. There are about at least 4 million, and that's a very, very conservative number across the United States.
And the average individual said, this is like you see on television. This could not be the reality of what's going on. And I would say, why not? I mean, certainly, how do you explain what's going on in the Middle East today? Some people estimate between 200,000 and 800,000 Iraqis have been killed since we invaded to bring peace and prosperity to Iraq. How do you explain something like that? Unless it's organized evil. And how do you explain the fact that now they want to go to war with Iran and they want to stay in Afghanistan and none of these things make sense unless people understand there is a spiritual battle being played out today.
It's good versus evil, Doctor.
Amen to that.
Now, I want everybody to check my website, tedgunderson.com.
Tedgunderson.com, and is there any sort of a telephone number, or they just go to the
website?
Well,
if I gave out my phone number, I'm afraid I would never be able to get off the phone.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, go to Ted. Do you have an email at all?
I have an email.
All right, why don't you put that in?
Yes, my email is Theodore Gunderson at, I'm not a computer man, so I've got to look it up. My email is Theodore Gunderson at yahoo.com, yahoo.com, all one word, Theodore okay. Gunderson at yahoo.com.
God bless you for everything
God
you
bless
do.
You. Thank you, Doctor.
And keep us, we'll keep you in our prayers because, you know, you're going to need an awful lot of prayer to keep you going. You wouldn't be alive today.
That's right. Well, listen, God's taking care of me, believe me.
God bless. Thanks very
doctor.
Much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was Ted Gunderson. Could this really be true? I believe it is. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me suggest, if you doubt what you've just heard, why, let me suggest you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Brotherhood of Darkness, you get the book we're carrying entitled Satanic Crimes, the book Hostage to the Devil, and my interviews with Father Martin, the wisdom of Malachi Martin. You get the two of them together at a reduced rate. And then, of course, to make this very real for you, the DVDs or videos, and they're available in the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Understand what's really going on today, and then help us get the truth out. We have a 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley. a four-tape set on the supernatural, and an interview with the author of the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. And, of course, that's in the four-tape set on the supernatural. Understand that this is not imaginary, and the tragedy is today that we don't talk about this sort of thing in our churches anymore. Well, we have another book. It's called Diary of a Devil Hunter. Excellent book. And it's about time that our ministers began talking about this spiritual battle. There really are people who are demonically possessed, not imaginary. It really does happen. And, of course, too, we recognize the fact that there are secret societies. They work at the upper echelons of our society. If you would like to see the leaders of our country in their black robes and hoods, you need to get the video, The Dark Side of the Bohemian Grove. There are actually pictures shot in the Bohemian Grove by Alex Jones, who snuck in there and risked his life. And this video, it's actually two videos on one DVD, but we recommend it. We have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. And then, of course, if we carry the book, The Secrets of the Tomb, the story of Skull and Bones, from which our president comes. And there they talk about this woman who saw one of their ceremonies as the people gathered for a Skull and Bones wedding, wearing their black robes and black hoods and candles and pagan chants. There was a film put out by Stanley Kubrick entitled Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise. And there they were, of course, with their black robes and their hoods. And, of course, Stanley Kubrick just happened to die as soon as the film was completed, before it was ever shown. Are there really people that wear these paraphernalia that they say the people in the Bohemian Grove worship the owl and have a feigned human sacrifice before the owl? Well, we've got the material we got from the Skull and Bones. We've got their secret literature. And we'll, and if you want, and you want to get into the other things, and ask for the opening pages to Volume 4, where they say, we worship the owl, a 40-foot owl, where they have every year, as the leaders of America, the presidents, the secretaries of state, the leaders of industry and commerce gather together, and to run around in the woods nude, and you need to get our four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove to know what really goes on at these wild parties. And, of course, you'll actually, get descriptions of what really takes place. Now, some of the people go there, like Nixon. Nixon went to those, but he was disgusted by what he saw, and he described them in very derogatory terms, and you'll find that in the White House tapes. But he went there because this is where the people with the power went, and he wanted to be associated with the people with power, and I suspect that's why Ronald Reagan went there as well. I mean, I believe that Ronald Reagan probably was horrified at what he saw, especially when the leaders of the world were running around naked in the woods. What madness is that? You need to get the DVD, The Dark Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, where you'll actually, of course, see Alex Jones' interviews with David Gergen, former counsel for the White House, admits he's been part of this. He left. Why did he resign from the Bohemian Grove? Because he didn't like running around naked. And when, of course, they're not naked, they're wearing their black robes and hoods, and people say, oh, well, that just comes out of the movies. Are you sure? Ask yourself what's going on in the Middle East today. How do you explain it? Does it make any logical sense? And when you realize it doesn't, then join us in this epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization.